At Baker's, no matter where you order free pickup, you get the same great deals as you'd get in-store. So you can save when you order during band practice or at the dog park or wherever. Start your cart with the Baker's app and save from wherever today. Baker's, fresh for everyone. $35 order minimum. Restrictions may apply. Subject to availability.
You can save an extra $10 when you spend $40 or more on a great selection of participating items. Just look for the signs and save at Baker's.
Hello. What are you doing here? Oh, hello. Yes, it's my podcast, episode 64 of Potteroony. Thanks for subscribing and thanks for listening to me bloody podcast. Wouldn't you like to hear some chat? I'm chatting to some people that I met over the last months. Yeah, well, I'm singing in that way because it's nearly Christmas. And Christmas always reminds me of Oliver. And Oliver is the old shit Cockney sing-along in it. So, this episode is a chat with two people. Not at the same time. Colin Mockery, the Canadian comedian improviser, who's a star of Whose Line's It Anyway. I met him down in Galway at the Galway Comedy Carnival a few months ago now, and we had a quick chat before between two gigs, and he'd appeared with the English blokes who were on Whose Line's It Anyway, and then he was doing another show later on. So I had a little chat with him. And then, it was just a couple of weeks ago, a young singer-songwriter lady called Emily Kavanagh from Chicago was over doing a gig in Wheelands, and she sang a couple of songs, and we had a chat in the Central Hotel. So it's really, really near Christmas now. It's just around the corner. I've finished all my live gigs. My last one was on last night and did some improv at the International Bar in Wicklow Street. And we collected 400 and something euro for the Home Sweet Home charity, which is fantastic, where the people have taken over the Apollo House to house homeless people. And it's always a great Christmas improv gig where everybody arrives in, the place is packed, and all the money from the door goes to charity, as we said. Yes, so wonderful. And at the weekend I finished off my last gig before that, in a corporate gig in the Shelburne Hotel. It was a weird one because there was a lot of chatting going on, as you will have in the afternoon when people have had a meal. Because the corporate gig can be like that. And so afterwards I thought, well, that's it. I've got one more gig, which is a bit of crack on Monday night. But I just kind of relaxed a bit. And on the way out, some people who had seen me before went, oh, you come sit down, have a glass of wine, blah, blah. So I had a glass of wine, and then I had a glass of wine, and it kept being topped up quite regularly. And then I met my girlfriend and her friend, and we had a Guinness, and then I had a gin, and then I had something to eat, and then I had more, and I got bloody drunk. And I'm afraid I was a little bit, I might have been a little bit frisky and rude or something, not really very rude, but perhaps thinking I was funny, to a few people who came up to me on the night, because I was down in the Workman's Club and at a gig, and then down in another bar. And you know, people frequently come up to me and go, hey, Father Damo, blah, blah, and I don't mind it at all, and the selfies and all that crack. But when you're drunk, and I was drunk, and I didn't mean to get drunk, I was accidentally drunk. Does anyone ever mean to get drunk? But I think I might have been trying to be funny with people, and it was coming, might have come across a little bit stupid. Or so if there's anybody, the chances of this happening, but anyone just listening to the podcast and who may have come up to me on the Saturday, Saturday the what? The 17th night in Dublin. And I was anyway kind of rude. I apologise. I don't like that. And I didn't mean to. I probably thought I was being hilarious. But it's that kind of thing where you think you're being cheeky and hilarious, but you're probably just being rude. So there, apology over. So Christmas is coming up, and I'd like to wish you all a very happy Christmas, and thank you for listening to the podcast. It's been going nearly 2 years now, and I've only realised that I could check in and see some reviews left on iTunes, and there's some very nice ones, and I'll go through them again, and I'll thank the people who've left those really lovely, lovely reviews. And well, my phone is ringing now. My bloody phone is ringing. Well, I tell you what, I'll come back to you. You can listen now to Colin Mockery. This chat is from Galway, and then I'll come back to you. And ooh, the phone is ringing. See you later. Hi, Colin. Thanks for meeting me.
Thanks for having me.
I believe you were out in at the Kong, is it? At the
yes.
Quiet Man.
Yeah,
Quiet Man.
It was a lot of fun. My wife and I are big Quiet Man fans, and I mean, this country is just so beautiful. So, for me, just being in a car and looking at the countryside go by is a thrill.
Yeah? Yeah. That's your first time here?
No. I was in Kilkenny, I think, 15 years ago for the Murphy Cat Laugh Festival.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been too long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's good to see you. That was brilliant. The show was amazing.
Oh, thanks.
It's really cool. It's fairly
loose, and it's a lot of fun. You never know what they're going to do. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in improv anyway, but these guys, it's 10 times worse.
Yeah. I mean, is it that difficult when you move from one group to another doing improv? Does it take a while to click with a group? Do you need to know?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, you should be able to work with anyone, and of course, that doesn't happen. I'm lucky that I've worked with these guys quite a bit, so I know them fairly well.
Yeah.
But there is that time where I find it really exciting because I work with Brad Sherwood. We're in our 14th year of touring now.
Yeah.
And it's always nice to jump in with a new group because you kind of have to go back to the basics of improv. I have to listen because you can't do any of your tricks. You just have to actually be in the moment. And I find it really sort of reinvigorating.
Oh, yeah, because you may, if you're in the same group, you kind of start relying on tricks or something.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing Brad and I have found over 14 years, keeping it fresh for us. So we're constantly trying to find ways where we don't do the same thing over and over again. But it gets hard.
Yeah, yeah. And I read, didn't you audition for Whose Line maybe 3 times? Is that correct?
Twice.
Twice.
I think legend says 3 because it sounds better. But yeah, twice. The first time I was at Second City in Toronto, which is a famous sketch group. People like Bill Murray and all those people came from. And the producers came and saw the show. They liked the show. So they auditioned us the next morning at 8, which is always the prime time for comedy. And we were doing, we auditioned as a cast, and we were doing that thing you do in improv where you make everyone look good. So nobody stood out, so none of us got cast.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the next year my wife and I had moved down to L.A., and I was auditioning with people I didn't know. So it was like, hey, screw you, look at me.
Yeah.
And so for all the kids out there, that's how you get ahead.
When you're doing an audition, don't be generous.
No, just save your own ass.
Yeah. And how many years then did you do? That was Whose Line for Channel 4, wasn't it? That was Channel 4.
My first year was 1990. Yeah.
1990.
And we've just got renewed for our fifth season in the States.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it's been off the air for a while, hasn't
it? It was off the air, I think, 2004 was our last taping with Drew. Yeah. And then we noticed, Brad and I noticed, our audience was actually getting younger, which really goes against showbiz rules. They're supposed to get older with you. Yeah. And we found out all the kids were catching up with the show on YouTube.
Right.
So all these kids who had never, who weren't born when the original show happened, started to catch up. So there was this groundswell of interest again. And someone at the CW network said, hey, let's put it on again. It's the cheapest show in the history of television.
There's no set.
Yeah, most of them are still alive.
No writers. So. yeah.
It's all good.
And who are you doing it with then?
It's this, Ryan Stiles and Wayne Brady, Greg Proops, and then there's some new improvisers. Aisha Tyler, who's a stand-up, now hosts it. And, as I said, we just got renewed for a fifth season.
So. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's
brilliant.
Like the Walking Dead. You just can't kill it.
Ah, it's great. Great to see you back. And when you started off then on the Channel 4 Whose Line Is It Anyway, Clive Anderson was the host, correct? Yeah. Was Greg Proops?
Greg was one of the... He and Mike McShane were like the first Americans to be involved with the show.
Right. And it was... And who? Any English? It was Tony Slattery, wasn't
it? Tony Slattery, yeah. Josie Lawrence, Steve Frost. Steve Steen and Jim Sweeney were... Paul Merton. I never actually got to work with Paul on the show, but a great cast of people.
Yeah, I actually went to see one of them being recorded live in, it was LWT Studios, I think. When they started bringing in guests, I think Ardla Hanlon from Father Ted
was
a guest.
Yeah.
On that particular one. And I'm interested in how, for TV improv, do you have to maybe change it? Maybe it's cut it down snappier or whatever.
Exactly. On stage you can take your time and, you know, build characters, build scenes. But with television, Whose Line was actually hated by improv purists because, you know, you're not supposed to be jokey. You're supposed to build a scene, build a character. But because of television, everything has to be in like 2 and 3 minute sort of chunks. So you can't, you know, take time building this wonderful character. You just have to go for the cheap jokes right away. Hopefully it works out.
You break the rules where you kind of undermine the whole scene, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there are no rules in television. They just want to get the product out.
I just imagine it must be nerve-wracking, though, because it's quite a pressure.
Yeah,
that
you would think.
Yeah.
There is. When you stop and think about it, you think, okay, we're going out there. We don't have a script. We don't actually have a show. But by the end of the night, we have to have something that has to go on television. So, but it really is the most relaxed I am in my life, sadly.
Really?
I think because, I know the cast members really well. Ryan and I grew up together, so I'd worked with him like 10 years before we started doing Whose Line together. Yeah. So it's a real comfort zone for me, and I always know somehow it's going to work out, and it usually does.
Yeah, and you're doing a show, or you did a show in The Fringe with the hypnotist. What's that? I saw the I haven't actually seen the show, so what's going on there?
Well, as I said earlier, I always like to put myself in positions that scare me because I find that's the most fun. So a hypnotist actually approached and said, I have this idea for a show. Would you be interested? So what the show was, he would bring 20 people up on stage, hypnotize them, sort of whittle it down to the best five, and then I would improvise with them. It was really odd.
Yeah.
And that... with that show, every night was nerve-wracking before I went on. It was like, okay, I don't know these people. And sometimes they would sort of come out of trance in the middle of a scene, which is weird.
And then they didn't know where they were, kind of thing? Or
I would talk to them afterwards, and they said, oh, no, I knew everything that was going on. Yeah. I understood. I just couldn't help myself. It was like whatever the hypnotist said, I would just go, that's a great idea, and do it. So that thing that stops us in our real life was gone. It was really interesting and a lot of fun because they had no guard. They would just, you would suggest something and immediately they would do it.
Yeah.
So it was just fascinating to watch and be a part of.
And you're doing scenes as well. So you're getting suggested like normal improv.
Yeah, we would do a scene where one of them, we would do a proposal scene where they had to propose to me, but they could only propose if I was sitting down. So we would get a place from the audience. We would have other of the subjects be objects in this scene, like scenery or benches or trees.
Yeah.
And again, that was fascinating. we had one person be a tree where they had their hands up for like a 10-minute scene, and there wasn't any shaking. They were just locked into that position. It was...
That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is weird. I find it interesting because a lot of people don't believe in hypnotism. A lot of people don't believe in improv.
Yeah.
So we put two things together people aren't sure about into one thing that they can't be sure about. So it was a lot of fun, though. I learned a lot about improv, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I was working in Mallorca for... When I started off doing comedy, I just got a terrible job doing stand-up in a club in Mallorca, you know. But there was a hypnotist out there who hypnotized this guy, and then he couldn't get him back. So he couldn't get him back out of the trance, and then he just left him sitting on a chair. And a rival hypnotist in the audience kind of came up and went, so you can't do that. You can't just leave him there.
Yeah.
Turned out they were going to call an ambulance, but turned out his English wasn't very good. So when he counted back from 10 to 1, he just kind of wasn't really understanding what was going on. He was like a German.
It's hard to save a show from that.
I know.
You go, wow, okay.
But the new hypnotist was going, like, it was the old guy whose job was taken by the new hypnotist. The other guy was in the audience. But the new hypnotist was just going to fucking leave him sitting on a chair.
Not good. No. We only had one incident. It was a funeral scene. We got a pet had died, and so it was the pet funeral, and they were the audience members were the family members, and you know, one would tell a heartbreaking story about it, and one, you know, we had a little song, but one woman was just devastated by the death and just kept crying.
Yeah,
and I was trying to find a way to, and finally the hypnotist just had to take her out and you know, gently took her back to her seat, but she was sobbing for the entire show.
Jesus.
Ah, comedy.
Yeah. And are you going to do that show again?
I think so.
Yeah.
My touring with Brad takes up a lot of time. Plus, the Whose Line show doesn't actually take a lot of time. It's like 8 tapings, and they can get like 25 shows from that. Mm-hmm. So that's great, and that it doesn't take a lot of time. But there's a lot of stuff. I do plays every once in a while, a lot of corporate shows. So. I'm hoping to do more of the hip-hop. We're trying to find a way to do that.
And is there a different slant on the Whose Line on Channel 4, say, when it was the English one and the one when it went to America? Is there kind of a different...
No.
No?
We're trying. because
but even the humor, I mean, or what gets laughs. Or,
Each host sort of brings their own thing to it. I mean, Clive was so English and had that dry, sarcastic. Mm. And Drew was like a big... goofy fan of the show, and you know, so American.
Drew Carey.
And now Aisha Tyler is this beautiful black woman who's also a nerd. She's in, you know, into Lord of the Rings and The Walking Dead, video games. So it's taken us a while to find ways to insult her. We're doing it, but it took us a long time.
Right.
But that's kind of been the only difference.
You're trying to insult her, but it's not working.
Yeah, it's not, because it's like, oh my God, you're beautiful and you're smart, and she's written like 5 books, and she's a stand-up. It's like, you work too hard. It's not the same.
Yeah. I've read that the musical part was the one that scared you the most. Would that be true? Yeah.
It scares me and it hurts me because I always wanted to be a musical comedy guy.
Yeah.
But I can't sing, which is a major drawback in that area.
Yeah.
But Brad and I have actually added a lot of musical elements to our show because, as I say, I always love doing things that I fear. And nothing scares me more than singing because I want it to be so good. And then as soon as my mouth opens and the first note comes out, it's like, no, it's not even close. I know that, but I soldier on.
You could just talk at Leonard Cohen. That's what Leonard Cohen's doing there.
That's too easy. The only thing that gets me by is my commitment.
Right, yeah, you just go for it.
Yeah, the people, I'm the audience representative. They go, oh, I could never do that. But look at him, God bless him, he's trying.
I think speaking is good. I mean, it never put off Bob Dylan and people like that they couldn't sing.
Yeah. Guy just got a Nobel Prize.
I know,
so.
But Lou Reed as well, another guy who could barely hit a note. You
know? Yeah.
So.
Well, I'll keep at it, you know, never too late.
Yeah. And did you work with your son Luke recently? Was that in a film or?
Oh God, it was a while ago.
Oh, was it also? Okay. Is he into this?
Musician,
showbiz?
Actually.
Oh, really?
Has all of his mother's musical talent. I have none whatsoever. So, as I mentioned, but now a drummer. Acts every once in a while. The problem is too many talents. I was lucky; I just had this. And the fact that it actually worked out for me still shocks me.
Oh, my son is like that as well. Like, he's a really good artist and plays drums, guitar, bass, and writes songs and sings on them. And
yeah, it's insane.
Sickening, isn't
it? The kids today seem to have so much going for them. Yeah. You know, they also have the internet, so they don't need a middleman. They can immediately put their stuff out there.
But also you can learn an instrument by just getting lessons online, free lessons. And you can live anywhere. You can live in...
I should check out singing lessons on the net.
You should. There we go.
Okay. I got something to do after this.
<He's gone. laughs> So is that basically your life is constant touring a lot or... You know,
touring a lot, but I mean, most of it's just weekends. Things like this is great because my wife comes with me.
And she was you met her.
She hired me for Second City.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah.
And we also have a show together where we kind of it's half improv. Well, it's kind of all improv, but we talk about our lives and we do improv scenes based on that or based on couples.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so I'm trying to get as many two-people shows going as I can.
Yeah, and have you done long form, actually?
I have done long form. There's a group in Toronto called National Theatre of the World.
Yeah.
And they do... they talk to the audience for a little bit, then they do a play based on whatever the playwright is. So I've done a Pinter... I did a British sex farce, some Chekhov.
And is it? I mean, it's playing it straight.
Yeah,
it's just
well, but it's playing it straight in that you keep the same character the entire, and you're keeping the integrity of whatever's set up, so you can't go too surreal and weird unless the playwright sort of calls for it. But
yeah,
so it's been interesting doing that because you know people will do a scene and then they will leave. Which never happens in improv scenes. You usually just stay there until the bitter end.
Yeah.
So it's actually like a real play. And it exercises a totally different part of your mind, which is interesting.
Like, it's completely different than to this short-form comedy thing. I mean, when you're doing comedy, to a certain extent, you are playing it straight. I mean, you've got a good deadpan kind of vibe going.
Oh, yeah. And also, I don't find the others funny.
Yeah.
So it makes it so much easier.
Yeah, no, I've never done long forms. I've done improv with those guys, actually.
They're insane, aren't they?
I've never done long form. I must give it a go. I'd love to give it a go.
Yeah, give it a try. It's fun and it's a different muscle.
And does it help your other kind of improv?
I think so. You can see, this is what happens when you actually stick with the scene and make sense of it. It can still work. There are times when you're doing the short form, there's every once in a while a little panic. It's like, okay, I haven't got a laugh in like a second.
Yeah.
Let's go nuts. So it's nice to have that slower pace and have a slower build to a laugh. It's just as satisfying.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So have you shot the new Who's Line already? And
We shoot in... February.
You shoot in February.
Yeah.
And that's going out then.
Yeah, so it's nice. A couple of weeks in LA where I just get to see my friends again and then bugger off.
Cool. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Thanks a million for talking to me.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Really good to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you, Colin. I'm standing in out of the rain by the canal watching the drops of rain pitter-patter, plippy-plop on the green, I hesitate to call it slime, some form of green growth. Coats the top of the canal. that kind of winter deadness here. The water is very still. The leaves have gone from the trees. The ivy coats the trees. The only leaves I can see at the moment. And I hear the chit-chat-chatty-chitty-chat-chat of the birds in the distance. There's a quite wonderful serenity here. And I feel much better, because I woke up this morning worried. Worried about my financial situation. My thinning hair and my disorganized flat. But now I feel better because I've gone for a little walk. Much, much better. Coming up, it's Emily Kaufner.
Emily Kaufner, I'm at a room in the Central Hotel, and we had a little chat, and she sang a song, and it was lovely, and we had a little chat, and she's a lovely girl. She got a nice personality, she gave a nice hug at the end, and she's really nice. Emily, thanks for me, Emily, and I hope y'all enjoy it. She's quite nice. It's just lovely. She's just bloody lovely. Enjoy it. See you now. Bye.
Baby, let's just stay a while the night is young and we. And we got nowhere else to be. And maybe in a little while the world is fast asleep, you'll be holding me so sweetly in your arms. And you can tell me all the things you know. Play me all your records low. One more thing before I go. I'm falling, yes, it's calling so much louder than before. I don't wanna know what for, just give me a kiss and my heart it shifts if it's love you're looking for. You don't have to look for more tonight. Baby, let's just dance a while the sky is bright and we. And we got nowhere else to be. And maybe in a little while, while the world is fast asleep, you'll be holding me so sweetly in your arms. And you can tell me all the things you know. Play me all your records low. One more thing before I go. I'm falling, yes, it's calling so much louder than before. I don't want to know what for, just give me a kiss and my heart it shifts if it's love you're looking for. You don't have to look for more. I'm falling, yes, it's calling so much louder than before. I don't want to know what for, just give me a kiss and my heart it shifts if it's love you're looking for. You don't have to look for more tonight.
Hello. Hi. Oh, Emily, we're sitting here in the Central Hotel.
Hello.
Where you have just sang a beautiful song. Tell me about that first song.
Cheers. Thanks. Yeah, so that first song is a song called In a Little While.
Mm-hmm.
And I released that a couple years ago on on a record called Keep It With Mine.
Yeah.
Which was inspired actually by a Bob Dylan song called Keep It With Mine.
All right.
And so just this idea, I don't know if this was what his idea was, but my takeaway from it was this idea that, you know, all these stories, which are so universal, are so personal, but they kind of bring us together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote a record it's 2013, put it out and been traveling with it and just sort of seen that come to light, this idea that everything that happens, even though, you know, I'm back in the States, I feel connected to my ancestry here and to the people here in Ireland and, you know, and like things like that.
Right.
So that's what kind of, I guess, inspired that record. And that's one of the songs off of there.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
And so you obviously have Irish heritage.
I do.
So
I do.
Does that come from both sides of your family? Both mother and father?
Yeah. So surname is Kavanagh.
Yeah.
And then my mom would be a Lawler. And our family's from Kerry, from the south of Kerry, from Camp, which is just this tiny little town between Dingle and Tralee.
Yeah.
And I took a bus down there. I was 30 and I'd never come to Ireland and I had to fix that. And so I came over and I stayed for about 6 weeks and I think I ate the Irish breakfast every one of those days of the 6 weeks. But one of the things I did was I took the trip down to Camp and actually met a guy who ran a B&B whose father had played with my great gran back in the day or had known of her. If not, you know, you never know. Stories get bigger every time they're told. But so he took me down these little windy roads in Dingle and I went and I met this man who was just lovely and learned all about my ancestors and kind of, you know, did a little bit of a look up and got to go to the church to see where my great auntie, I guess, would have been baptized. Maggie Griffin was her name.
Griffins.
And so
you're saying there's music in your family because he said
there's music in my family. My gran was a singer and she sang in the south side of Chicago. And, you know, she did a few good shows. Like, she did something every year called the Southside Follies, which would have a good following.
Yeah.
But, you know, then she married my grandpa and had 7 kids and 25 grandbabies later. And so was singing the odd wedding here and there. And then.
So what kind of music would she have sung?
I suppose, you know, people would say she was like a jazz singer.
Yeah.
But I wonder if that was also just the time, because that was kind of what the music was going on then.
Yeah.
You know, in the 30s and the 40s. But she would do a lot of those old standards.
But she would have sung at the time what was modern.
Like
music.
Irving Berlin and things like that, you know. And she knew a lot of Irish songs, too. You know, she would have sung those when we were kids. And I grew up knowing about the Clancy Brothers and Christy Moore and
Bob Dylan's
Tommy Fleming. And
band, the Clancy Brothers.
That's right. That's right. I remember reading that.
Yeah. And so then you were always intent on getting into music. Would that be true?
Since I was a little girl, I was singing.
Yeah.
And I would always write, but I never really knew if I could make a career of it. I mean, I still don't know if I can make a career of it. I'm trying anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm okay to be penniless, so I guess that's part of the deal, you know. But then when I put this record out a few years ago, things started to take off a bit, where I could be playing and gigging pretty regularly, you know, and traveling a bit to do so. And I'm based in New York, but going back to Chicago and seeing family and playing there and coming over here and playing in Dublin and playing down in Dingle and Killarney and all throughout Kerry and Mayo and Cork.
Have you played all over Ireland?
I have. Right. Yeah. You know, I booked my very first gig, and I always put it in quotes because it was like it must have been like maybe 6 people or something, but was in this little pub called McCormick's out in Naas.
All right. I don't know it actually.
And so this was years ago now,
yeah.
But it was one of those things where like it was meant to kick off at 7 and then half 7 and then 8 then half 8 and then 9 and then
Irish
began at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've learned that like time is just a suggestion here in Ireland. That was my very first lesson. And brushed with that. But that gig was great because it actually sort of changed some things because Patty Casey ended up coming to that gig and we became great friends started playing together a bit. So it's been good fun ever since then.
Oh, yeah. I've done some gigs with Patty as well.
Yeah. So. I think he had said that you guys are friends. Yeah.
And were you singing original stuff that at that gig, like that show?
At that gig, I would have been doing. Yeah. That was kind of like right when this record had come out, you know. So I was sort of.
Oh right! Really?
Okay. I wouldn't have been. I wouldn't have been just doing that. Like, we did some covers. Mm. A friend of mine came over from the States, and he's this great guitar player and busker, and Carl Banks. And he'd come over with me, and so, you know, we didn't really know what to expect. I mean, actually, at McCormick's, they were like, and have you got your amps and your microphones and your... And we're like, we've just gotten in from New York, you know? Yeah. We only have our luggage and our... hardly anything else. But, so we were just sort of starting out at that point. Mm. But it's grown from there, and I've loved playing. You know, I got to play down in Dingle, and I loved McCarthy's. And I know you're from Galway, is that right?
Well, I was born in Tuam, Galway. But I grew up in Meath, really. I was five when we left Galway, so...
Okay, but played at Monroe's, which I loved.
Oh, right, Monroe's, absolutely.
Oh, so beautiful,
That's a nice pub. Yeah, I've sung there with the band as well. I sang with Ronan McManus, who is... Elvis Costello's younger brother, actually. Declan McManus is Elvis Costello's real name. So,
are you serious?
Yeah, in Monroe's.
In Monroe's, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a good place.
So, and you went to music college?
So I got my undergrad. Mm. My bachelor's degree would be in music and jazz performance, and then my master's was in social work. So I've actually spent the last, I guess I'd say, a good 7 or 8 years working. The first. Maybe half of that full time as a social worker and just singing and gigging on the side. And then the last few years doing a bit more with music as the center, but still freelancing. I work for a woman who is a Broadway director and she runs an organization called Artists Striving to End Poverty. So we bring musicians and artists and writers and people to places where kids are living in poverty, you know, orphanages and shelters and things like that throughout South Africa and India and the DR and bits of the States. And so I get to kind of combine the two things I love, you know, a bit of activism and social work and then music.
And do you make songwriting part of what you do when
I do,
working with kids or
Yeah, I find that...
How does that work?
Sure. So there was this program in the South Bronx that needed... It was a shelter. It was 46 beds, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And the kids were about 18 to, let's say, 21, 22. Mm-hmm. But had been living on the streets all their lives. And so they needed a place to come. And so the city would, you know, facilitate this center. Mm. But they never had any kind of music program or any kind of arts. And so I was at this point, ironically enough, that, you know, I was sort of wanting to transition to where music would be more of what I was doing, but always wanted to be helping and, like, doing something that was, you know, a little bit bigger than myself, maybe.
Yeah.
And so the timing just worked out perfectly. So I was able to build this program from, like, you know, the bottom up with, like, not a dollar, totally from scratch. But we'd bring in DJs and writers, and we would put on shows and showcases. You mentioned the Apollo Theater, things like that. The Apollo Theater. Like, we would partner with different venues that would then put on some of the works of the kids. And we never quite made it to the Apollo, but I'm still in touch with someone there who says that we're going to one of these days. So that's, like, my promise to the kids in the Bronx is someday we will get them to play the Apollo. But
that'd be cool.
But yeah, so all their original works, like, they would take,
so the kids would write
their
songs,
stories and things.
Part.
Yep. They take their life story and maybe they'd put it into a rap or they'd put it into a tune or they'd put it into a story or a book or a, you know, and then we would showcase that 3 or 4 times a year in various venues throughout New York.
Wow, that's a really great idea. I saw an article in The Guardian where you mentioned where it was like you were bringing your music. It was more than just you're writing songs, but you were making a part of what you do is in your life.
Yeah, and I find that, you know, people used to kind of say, well, how do you combine those two? Like, those are such different things, you know, social work and music. But I guess I look at it like social work is sort of about, you know, listening to someone's story, and then music is about telling one, you know, so they're not really all that different.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of can connect. And it brings everyone together, you know, so it's pretty powerful and it's good fun. I mean, I really loved meeting some of these kids and, like, just, I don't know, getting to dance and laugh and learn about different ways of life and different cultures and you know.
So you've done this around the world, not just in the States, but you've been to where, India, have you?
So I've never been. So not this is my first year with A-Step, with Artists Striving to End Poverty. So the hope would be maybe, you know, this summer perhaps or come fall, like, to go to one of the South Africa or India or somewhere and bring the music. And
Wow, that'd be brilliant.
Oh, I would love that. I would absolutely love that.
And I'm sure it must be a great inspiration for our songs as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Hearing people's stories. And
I worked with a woman who was a survivor of the genocide, actually, in Rwanda. And she was just so inspiring and had shared her story with me. And I was able to turn some of what she had shared with me into a song. And so that was actually on that last record as well. It's a song called Dark Was the Night. But you know, you just meet people and the things that they've been through, you feel like someone's got to tell that story, you know?
Yeah. I love that song, Come Here. That was,
thank you.
We were just listening to it in the car coming in on Spotify.
Thank you. Freshen up a bit. Like,
yeah. You got to do that.
Yeah.
It's called Research.
Yeah.
So you said you wrote that in college, was it?
Or? I would have written that when I moved to New York, which was right around that time. Yes, so I would have been in grad school. And actually, I wrote that song in the F train. Going from Manhattan out to Brooklyn.
All right.
Because we had a gig on that night, and I was like, people are so tired of the same old songs, you know? So I kind of, I don't even really remember what inspired it, but I was just...
Do you write in your head then? Do you have to have your guitar? Or do you have to have a...
It's funny, I guess, because I think of like sort of my music as more about the voice and the story than the guitar playing and the piano.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I'm really not much of a guitar player or piano player. Yeah. You know, so sometimes it'll just come as an idea and then it'll sort of just
melody
dance
will come into your head.
There. Yeah.
The whole melody.
The melody will come into the head.
And then
it's so much easier to put it down, you know, on paper or with the piano, with the help of the piano.
Yeah.
You know, but if you don't have one and you're on the F train, I suppose you just take out a notebook and start scribbling.
Yeah.
And that's how that
song
was
born. But are you
singing
to yourself on the train?
Ah, you're looking crazy. But then again, you're in New York, so is everyone, you know?
Yeah. So I'm just doing a quick interview here.
This is an
emergency fire exit.
Oh, okay.
No.
You've assumed an awful lot of you.
Okay.
Okay.
The fire officer walked in now. This has to be kept clear.
We'll get moving.
Okay, we'll get going now, actually.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, thank you.
We should keep that bit in.
I'm going to keep that bit in.
Yeah, I think you should.
We probably won't hear what he says.
That's probably the best.
We've just been told that we're a fire hazard. Anyway, we're so hot.
We just can't help ourselves. We really can't.
Right. Well, listen, it's been great chatting to you. So you're going to...
You too.
Yeah, and thanks for meeting me. And how long are you staying in Ireland now?
I'm only here till tomorrow. But,
all right, yeah.
So... just enough time to get one more Irish breakfast in before I go back.
And then get to the gym. You don't
absolutely.
Need to go to the gym.
No, I don't know. I feel like I've gained, what is it, 2 stone? Is that what you guys call
stone,
it?
Stone, yeah, stone.
Would that be about right?
That's a lot. No, you haven't.
Maybe it's not quite that
unless
much.
Unless you were really emaciated before you got here. But,
all that brown bread and the butter and the chocolate. Like, I don't even want to eat butter and chocolate back in the States now because I'm spoiled here.
Chocolate. Have we got good chocolate here?
The dairy milk.
Yeah.
And the digestives.
Oh, digestives.
Oh, my God. Forget about it. I could just do a whole pack of those on my own. I really could. You leave me alone for 2 minutes.
Do you dunk? Do you dunk in the tea? We better finish up. Your man's coming
back. I do dunk in the tea.
Do you? Yeah. I love dunking.
You got it.
Yeah. And tell me about the song we're going to finish on now.
So this song is actually a song that I just arranged. It's not an original of mine. It's a song called I Wish You Love. And it's an old standard, and it's a song that I've been hearing for years, and I'm going to put it out on a record that's coming out this summer. So
cool.
Had wanted to do it and had, you know, just the lovely chance to meet these guys, Adam Taylor and Jake Curran, the other night up at Whelan's and play it for the first time there. So thought we'd put it out here today.
All right, cool. Yeah. Thanks. So you could be found on Spotify.
On iTunes. On Pandora, Emily Cavanaugh Music.
Yeah.
And here in Dublin.
That's right. Here in the Central Hotel as a fire hazard. Anyway, thank you.
I'll be kicked out in about 2 minutes.
Let's go.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks
for having me.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Okay.
And I wish you bluebirds in the spring to give your heart a song to sing, and then a kiss. What's more than this?
I wish you love. And in July, a lemonade to cool you in some leafy glade. I wish you health and more than wealth. I wish you love. But it's my breaking heart, and I agree, it's you and I could never be. So with my very best, darling, I set you free. I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire to keep you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love. My breaking heart, and I agree, it's you and I could never be. So with my very best, darling, I set you free. But I wish you shelter from the storm, a cozy fire to keep you warm. But most of all, when snowflakes fall, I wish you love.
Oh, well, that's great. Emily Kavanagh, what a great girl. What a lovely person. Great to meet her. Thank you, Emily. And perhaps I'll see you over the other side of the pond sometime. Because I will be over in New York in March, pretty sure now, and I'll be chatting, hopefully, with a few people over there. Dan Vitale, who I've heard interviewed on Marc Maron and loved his interview, and I'm in contact with him now, and I'd love to sit down and have a chat with him in New York. I've got a great one coming up in January. I'm down in Boyle's Bar in Slane. I'll be talking to Fikra Tench, who has done the string arrangements for that song Fairy Tale of New York, and he's worked with Van Morrison and Phil Lynott and many, many more. And I'll be talking to him in front of a live audience. He'll be bringing the keyboard, and that sounds like a great night on January the 5th in Boyle's of Slane. So if you can make time, come on down. I'd like to thank Daniel Rooney. He's my son, who's provided some of the music for the podcast. And Andrew Mangan, who has produced the early ones this year of the podcast. And all of you for listening. Anyone who's contacted me, I'm on Joe Rooney 1 Twitter, and JoeRooneyComedian.com is my website, and things are looking up. At this time last year, I have to say, I was in quite a bad place, and a whole year has gone by, and I feel a lot better, a lot better, and I've got my own little place to live now because I was a bit stuck for a while, and met an absolutely wonderful, amazing, brilliant woman, and things are looking fantastic. So 2017, bring it on. Bring it on, Niwanigon. Dee-dong, dong, dong, dong. Okay, have a lovely Christmas, and talk to you after Christmas. Bye, bye. I love you. Goodbye. Stay alive. I will stay alive. I will find you. Goodbye.
Point of that story, the Patty Casey thing is that he played, so I went to the All-Ireland, I saw Cork play Clare. He played for 86,000 people, he was the halftime. And then even the next night, I was playing for the six people in the pub, I didn't get to that whole story.
Oh.
I didn't know.
I'll tell that story.
You tell that story.
Yeah.
And so then a friend of his had played my song for him that she heard on the radio, and he's like, oh, let's go in and see her. Comes in, and so thank God, the point of that whole story was thank God that gig kicked off when it did on Irish Time.
Oh, yeah, because otherwise you would have missed it.
This whole thing would have never happened.
That's cool.
If it really hadn't been for that timing, like, I might have never.
Yeah.
Since become great friends.
Anyway. So Irish Time.
Yeah. I actually want to write a song called Irish Time.
Yeah.
That's going to be the next record.
That'd be good, actually. That would be good. Yeah, that's cool.
Thanks for having me.
Progressive presents Don't Do It Yourself.
Okay, fixing a water heater. Easy peasy.
Oh, yeah? So you know how to secure this gift joint?
Yeah.
Detach the steam pump?
Takes 2 seconds.
And fasten the dew bowl to the pressure tube?
Yeah, my dad taught me how to do that.
Oh, that's interesting, because I made all those things up. Look, we should just bundle our home and auto with Progressive. We could save big, then pay someone to do it for us.
That's cool. This dew bowl's the wrong size anyway.
Save when bundling home and auto with Progressive and use the money to, you know, not do it yourself. Coverage from Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and third-party insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.